Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Soul Seekers podcast, where we believe that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure as we share our mission of mentorship is conservation. To learn more about everything we do, check out our show on Carbon TV or go to soulseekersnation.com. Freedom on, everybody, and stay soulful. If you want to take your shooting experience to the next level, then check out Coltac gear for 100% made in America products. Coltac manufactures specialty gear designed for long-range shooting, hunting, and other tactical applications. From their support bags, suppressor covers, shooting mats, and a whole lot more, Coltac is creating tough, durable, and innovative gear for both civilian and professional markets. Go to Coltac.com to see all that they have to offer. That's Coltac.com. If you are looking to get a new rifle or build your own, look no further than Kelbley's. Kelbley's actions and rifles have a higher level of accuracy and hold 92 world records set on either one of their rifles or rifle actions. Whether you're looking for an ultralight mountain rifle or wanting to compete in precision rifle shooting, Kelbley's has you covered. Go to Kelbley.com to find out more or give them a call as their customer service is the best. That's Kelbley.com. Kelbley's. If you're looking to take your hunting to another level, there's no better way to do it than by subscribing to Onyx Hunt. If you want to get better at hunting and go deeper into your scouting, Onyx is the number one GPS app for that. Join the millions of hunters who trust Onyx Hunt to find more game, discover new access, and hunt smarter. If you want to know more about Onyx, go to onyxmaps.com/hunt or download their app today for a free trial. If you are wanting to become more accurate and deadly with your shooting, one of the best things you can do is upgrade your trigger with a Timney. Timney triggers are 100% made in America and have been since their founding, providing a crisp, reliable, and repeatable trigger break every time. I'll be shooting Timney triggers in my guns this year, and I hope you'll join me in shooting the world's finest trigger. Go to TimneyTriggers.com to get yours today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Soul Seekers Podcast. I'm your host, Johnny Mack, and thank you so much for tuning in to this episode as we are diving into precision shooting. The whole idea of being a hunter is being the most ethical, lethal, precision shooter, killer, hunter, whatever you want to call it, that you can be in the mountains. The object of the game is to kill the quarry that we're after, and you're not going to do that if you're not a good shot, or you're not going to do it effectively if you're not precise. So we're going to be talking all about becoming a better shooter today. Today we have Don Fritz from Fritz Precision Shooting, and he's going to talk all about becoming a better shooter. The fundamentals are everything, as he says. So without further ado, Mr. Fritz, Don, great to have you on. Thanks for coming on and sharing your wisdom. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's always exciting to, you know, my passion is sharing this information with people, educating the shooting community. And God's honest truth, the more that I've done it, the more I've realized that the community needs some education. You know, so much of it is, it's old. It's, you know, we're learning, and especially in the hunting community, what our grandfathers taught our dads, what our dads taught us, what our buddies learned from their dads. And not evolving with the technology, with the capabilities of the rifle systems, the cartridges and such, and seeing that more and more people not understanding, you know, bullets don't fly like laser beams, and I can't just point it at it at 300 or 400 yards, pull the trigger, hit it. Yeah. And not only is there gravity involved, there's the environment, there's wind, and regardless of if you're shooting at a target or trying to harvest an animal, we all want to do the same thing. We want to hit the target. And I really like breaking things down so people understand that one key thing we all have in common is how to hit the target. And right. That's what I love showing people how to do.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I appreciate that because I just, listeners, if the listeners on this episode have followed along through this coming year, I actually signed up for my very first PRS match and I shot it back in the month of May. That was one of my goals for 2025 was to become a better shooter, right? To hone my craft. I can find animals. I can locate water sources. I can understand thermals and wind. But when it comes down to it, the moment that makes me a hunter versus an observer of nature, could I accomplish that task effectively? And I'm a good shooter. I'm naturally a good point of aim guy. I shot a BB gun, a Red Ryder, from my youth all the way. And I really attribute a lot of my shooting skills because of that. But that's not precision necessarily, right? And so to start reaching out and dialing for distance and having a dope chart and all this stuff, like, that's next level that a lot of people aren't prepared for, right? Like, so I went into my first PRS match and I was like, holy crap, there's a lot to learn. And just by doing one match, and it was a one-day match, I learned so much and built so much confidence in myself in being a shooter and be like, okay, well, man, I can totally hit a bear at 500 yards across a canyon now. Like, I don't even hesitate, especially because we're not just laying prone or shooting off a bench in PRS. You are balancing your rifle and learning how to get into shooting positions and building a position. And that was one of the big key things.
Well, I bet on your first match there, you learned what not to do real quick.
Oh, yes. Very much so. Very much so. And so I want to get you to talk here, but I just want to finish up this point is what I realized is we are taught gun safety, you know, and I say we like the royal we. We're taught gun safety. We're taught hunter's ed. But we're never really taught how to be the most effective killer on the mountain, right? And that's one of the things that I think is lacking in modern day with the progression of all the technology and advancements in rifles and cartridges and all this is people are still like, well, my grandpa learned this in the military, and he taught me this at the gun range. We were shooting paper at 100, maybe 200 yards. But beyond that, how many people are actually being like, I'm going to sign up for a course. I'm going to learn how to be the best I can and then take that and apply it in the field and investing in themselves. And that's one of the keys and why I wanted to have you on for this podcast.
Oh, absolutely. And you hit that on the head is those who want to own that craft and you know, this is on the hunting side. And I bet greater than 50, 60% of my students want to translate it one way or another to hunting. Mm-hmm. And the long range community has bled into hunting. You know, it used to be 250, 300 yards. That was a poke. And now that we have this technology, newer cartridges, and people have this mindset that, oh, all I got to do is download this app. And I can get, you know, my bullet speed or what have you, or not understanding even the dynamics of that. And, oh, now I, you know, this is a long range cartridge. So I can shoot 500, 600, 700, 800 yards and right. Not knowing the dynamics of managing dispersion. We'll talk about that. The recoil impulse and then the environment. I mean, the environment, the wind will be 80% of your miss, period.
Yeah.
So I tell people, once you learn this stuff, spend 80% of your time learning 80% of your miss. Mm-hmm. What's the environment going to do to you? You know, you brought up thermals, you know, anabatic, catabatic flows. What does that mean? You know, as a hunter, well, you don't want to be, you don't want to blow them out with your scent before you get there. So you pay for the wind. Right. So you're already paying attention to the wind.
Yeah.
You're not get an idea of what the wind speed and wind direction is.
Yeah.
That way, when you're getting ready to make that shot, you're already cognizant of, all right, wind's going this way and it's about this fast. How much is it going to move that bullet?
Right. Right. You know, and going, retracting just a second, not just talking about wind, but talking about just distance shooting, you know, as somebody getting into shooting and hunting and being able to shoot at longer distances, one of the biggest hurdles from my mind and from my pocketbook was the idea of how do I get bullet speed, right? Like it, right. Chronographs were $800 or, you know, there's like, who had a chronograph? Who could I find and then go to the range and borrow? And how do I attach this to my barrel? And I don't want to blow this guy's piece of equipment up. And all of a sudden now chronographs are a lot easier, a lot cheaper, and you can put them in your pocket and go. And then all of a sudden you're able to build this data for your weapon so that you can be more efficient. And I think that's one of the things I wanted to mention is because that's the advancement in technology that helps us become better shooters because it's easier acquirable, right? Like a Garmin Chrono is one of your best friends and everyone should be adding it to their Christmas list if they don't have it.
They're priceless.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're priceless. You know, the old chronographs that relied on light, there was a pretty significant margin of error. depending on the type of light, cloudy, you know, partly sunny or what have you. And there was a pretty good margin. So we had a decent idea of what our speed was on our bullet, but it wasn't exact. Now, being able to use Doppler radar, we actually know our bullet speed. Mm-hmm. We know our bullet weight. So now we've got gravity. How much is it going to drop? So they're very, very key things. And I've even seen more and more in the hunting community where people are looking at, what cartridge should I get? Do I get the, do I go with a 7 PRC? Do I go with a 6.5 PRC? Do I want a 300 Win Mag? Well, I'm looking at the box and this one's going faster. Mm-hmm. Speed is relevant, but also irrelevant. It's bullet shape. What's the rate that bullet's going to slow down? Because I can shoot a 4570 at 2200 feet per second and that thing's going to slow down fast, just like a muzzle loader.
Right.
And understanding the dynamics of ballistic coefficients, and they're on the box, but it's a number that we don't understand and can't wrap our head around. But I can throw it in my app and I think it's going to get me there and go shoot backyard perfect at 100, 200, 300 yards.
Yeah.
And then enter nerves, enter hostile terrain,
totally.
Enter fever, and that half or one inch group is probably two or three now.
Yeah. Well, here's some anecdotal evidence from just yesterday. I went out to the gun range. I brought my boys with me, and I got a brand new gun, Kelbley's Atlas Light Action. Beautiful gun, chambered in 25 Creedmoor. I'm like, all right, new gun, new caliber, new offerings. Like, let's get it zeroed. And I got it chronoed, got my speeds. Well, I couldn't find now, and this is still stuff that I don't even understand why one is better than another. And so I don't want to go too nerdy and talk over people's heads. So maybe you can explain it. But I went on Hornady's website and I was like, dude, I don't find the BC, the ballistic coefficient. Where's the G1? Where's the G7 or G6? I found the G1 and guys who are this range I shoot at is big PRS range. And so they're like, oh, well, you know, you can get away with that, but you really need that G6 in order to, is it G6 or G7? I see.
G7.
Okay,
G7. Yeah, you're right.
And you really need that G7 if you're going to shoot it out past, you know, 600 yards. And I was like,
yeah,
okay. Well, I don't understand why or what exactly that means. Well, I took the gun, got it zeroed, walked it out to 420, had a coyote steel target. I laid prone, checked wind, bam, stuck it. I'm like, hell yeah, yes, man. Like, I got this. And then I walked it all the way out to 1125 and shot it. There's a buffalo steel target. And I was whiffing. And all of a sudden, I was like, oh, wait. I didn't account for my coefficient not being the G7 that I needed, and I put the G1 in, and so it changed my dope. And then once I adjusted for that, then I was hitting at 1125 yards on a brand new rifle, well, on a 3-15 power scope, second focal plane. Like, it's all these things are doable, but you need to have the right numbers to add into the equation to give you the bad data in equals bad data out.
Garbage in, garbage out, man.
Yeah. So
understanding those numbers, just like your bullet speed, your bullet weight, excuse me. And, you know, you mentioned the G7, you know, the G1 is an older drag model and it's what we used to use for a long time. And then the G7 became, instead of this like verifiable hypothesis based off of like our own dope, it now becomes predictable. And I like to call that number, that's your bullet's efficiency number. And that number is going to vary a little bit from the box, but it's going to be pretty darn close. And it's going to get you, at farther distances, you might be a little low, a little high, because every barrel, every chamber is going to shape that bullet just slightly differently and either make it a little more efficient than the number they posted or a little less efficient. Mm-hmm. And some of them just happen to land exactly what the manufacturer says based on your bullet speed. And understanding that, but also you translate that to harvesting an animal, we have time of flight. And we have kinetic energy. So, you know, if we want 1,100 foot-pounds of kinetic energy on a deer, and we want 1,300 foot-pounds of kinetic energy on an elk, when you start looking and look at your ballistics app and just pick a target, and it'll give you, like, the time of flight, remaining energy, remaining velocity, and you'd be surprised how many cartridges actually don't have that much energy outside of 600 or 700 yards.
Right.
And, you know, I instead of arguing with folks, I finally Because I get the guy who's like, oh, yeah, we were over off Center Canyon, and there was elk at 1,370 yards. And, we sent a couple of them, and my buddy said I was 6 feet low. And I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. And I asked him what I'm shooting, you know, and he's like, oh, 300 rum or 7 mag. Mm-hmm. So I asked the dude, I said, how about this? Would you hunt an elk with a 9mm bullet, with a 9mm pistol? He's like, well, no. I said, well, you have less kinetic energy at that distance than a 9mm point blank. So you just told me you wouldn't hunt with a 9mm.
Yeah.
Effectively, that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And it was an eye opener. It's not bashing someone. It's just, dude, you got to understand. I mean, this thing's slowing down as it's going there, and you have time of flight. Now you're 2 seconds plus. That animal can move in 2 seconds.
Yeah. And I just want to jump in here, and because I don't want to necessarily talk so much about bullets in this conversation as what the process of talking about shooting. And then this is not knock on you. I just want to interrupt and say, if you want to know more about bullets, because when we're talking about kinetic energy and foot pounds per square inch at distances and slowing down, it's not just about that. It's also about the bullet construction and what that bullet will do as far as weight retention, or will it expand, or is it fast enough to open up, or is it still going to pencil through? So I just want to reference listeners, go check out episode 326. I did an episode, The Velocity Advantage, Unpacking the Power of Fast Bullets. So cool. That is a great episode for listeners to go reference. But sorry, Don, on that. I just needed to throw that in there.
You steer the ship here.
Well, and so the kinetic energy, you were saying, like, you just said you wouldn't shoot an elk with a 9mm, but it has more kinetic energy than what you're saying you're shooting it at that distance. And
right.
So just kind of wrapping that up is a lot. There's a lot of misunderstanding, and people will assume like, oh, well, it's a 300 Win Mag, it's good. Or it's a 6.5 Creedmoor, it's good. There's a lot of misconceptions. So before diving into the nerd terminology and all that talk, talk to us from the foundations. Talk to us about if I'm signing up for one of your precision shooting courses and you say fundamentals are everything, what are the ABCs of fundamentals when it comes to shooting?
Breaking it down to, I like to show people I have a rifle sitting on a tripod, mm-hmm. and I'll say, can you see the muzzle? They're like, yeah, everyone look at that. And I'll, from the butt stock, I'll wiggle it and I'll tell them, can you see that move? Well, yeah, that's dispersion. So basically when we look at, we know that there's going to be two levels of inputs to dispersion. There's what the rifle system's going to do. It's going to kick, right? There's recoil. So there's movement. And then there's the human aspect. I have a respiratory rate, heart rate, and I'm going to induce a level of movement, if you will. So let's say it takes just shy of a tenth of a second for the bullet to leave the barrel. The rifle is moving as it's leaving the barrel. So where were you aiming versus where's the barrel now pointed, mm-hmm. as the bullet leaves that barrel? And those are the things to think about, because when things small at the shooter are large downrange, we've got to do our best job to manage that movement. That's step number one. Is the physical aspect of being able to manage the movement of the rifle system. The larger the caliber, the lighter the gun, the more it's going to kick, the more it's going to move. That recoil impulse is larger, so the movement is more significant. You've got to be cognizant of that and build your position to manage that movement as linear as possible so that the barrel doesn't lift or go left or go right. And understanding that from the beginning helps understand small here is huge downrange. Then it's quality ammunition that's all going the same speed. You mentioned the Garmin Zero C1 Pro, mm-hmm. is phenomenal, because there are times I've gotten some ammunition and they have an SD, a standard deviation of speeds of 50, 60, 70 feet per second. That doesn't work. So quality ammunition that's going the same speed is going to give you more equal results downrange. Mm. Then is your system precise? The shooter is or isn't accurate. The system is or isn't precise. So is it capable of producing a less than a 1-inch group at 100 yards? If it is mechanically capable of that, then your input to it is probably going to open that up. Let's call it a 1-inch group at 100 yards. That's respectable. So managing that recoil impulse and managing a small group, now you're accurate. managing dispersion with a precise system. Now, of course, we get into the nicer actions and barrels and such, and they're pretty much physically capable. If you can lock them down with quality ammunition with low SDs and they don't move, they would pretty much put it through the same hole. Mm-hmm. Now there's the human aspect, and I can manage a 3/8 or a 1/2 inch group. Cool. Well, that 1/2 inch group is 5 inches at 500 and 10 inches at 1,000. So you start thinking about those things. And then, like we talked earlier, is now you add environment, add wind to that, and now add excitement, because we're managing that group calm, cool, and collected in our backyard or at the range. And it's like, yeah, that's a good group size. I did a good job. Now do a couple push-ups and a couple burpees and jump behind that thing, see what you can do.
Right.
Because heart rate's increased, right? You're breathing. You're like, man, I can't hold it still. You got to be honest with yourself and go, okay, yes, this is what it's capable and I'm capable of. But in the realistic aspect, let's reel it in a little bit and make sure that we can make that ethical shot and understand your cartridge capability. So it really is broken down to a system, you know, a quality rifle system that is precise and understanding dispersion. It is movement. How can I manage that movement to then be accurate? You put those three things together and the rest of it's just the geek stuff. It's gravity, what ballistics app you're going to use, whether it's, you know, Hornady forward off using a Kestrel or, you know, AB Quant, whatever one, they're all really, really good. I mean, that's why there's different colors, flavors, and brands, right? Because right. Someone's like, you know, you might drive a Toyota, I drive a GMC, blah, blah, right? They get us from point A to point B, and they do what we selected it to do. And some do a better job at one thing versus the other, and that's where you get into cartridge selection. But when you get into the math side of it, all of it is the same, whether it's a 22, a 300 PRC, a muzzle loader, gravity pulls downward, and wind moves it one way or the other. And understanding those things. And then you get into a little bit more of, okay, I live at sea level. I shoot here. And now I'm on this hunt in Colorado at 12,000 feet. Now we got to be aware of air density. Once you're aware of air density, all it does is changes how much that bullet's going to drop. And when you can understand that, that's one thing. I can't step outside, stick my finger in the air and go, density altitude today is about 5220. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do that, right?
Yeah.
And it changes dependent on, and basically your air density changes based off of station pressure. So the barometric pressure where you're standing, temperature and humidity, come up with this number of the equivalent air density. And I actually had, I had Butch Whiting out here from Crypto.
Yeah.
And we were talking about this, and he has a Kestrel, and he was talking about a hunt and a shot that went over the animal. But where he was at wasn't aware that the density altitude where he was at could have been 16, 17,000 feet. So that bullet's not slowing down. His wind hold was perfect. He was like, it was perfect left to right, but it went right over the top. That dot connected real fast on, I can pull the trigger well. I can find the animal. I can do my part and make a good shot, even holding appropriately for wind, but not being aware of that one factor of air density generated a miss.
Okay. And then just for layman's term or 101 status, the higher up in elevation you go, the denser the air is,
or the less
dense. The less dense, meaning less resistance to the bullet and less drop you're going to have over distance. Correct?
Right. Okay. Correct.
Okay.
Because air is a barrier that the bullet is traveling through. And the more dense that air is, it's going to slow down quicker. The less dense that air is, it's not going to slow down quite as fast. So if you tried to remember your dope or your holdover, how many MOA you were going to hold at 500 yards at sea level, and think that number is still going to work on your dope chart on the side of your stock at 9 or 10,000 feet, you're probably wrong. So, and that's where these ballistics apps have become phenomenal in helping educate us on the things that we can't just pick up quickly and determine the air density.
But this is also why, like, that Garmin Zero chronograph is so critical, because I put that in my gun case and flew it up to Idaho from Texas, and I checked my dope by shooting a couple rounds at distance at a target before I went on my hunt, because my elevation was so drastic and it wasn't cumbersome to take it along. It was light, it was quick, you know. And
right. It's not like packing up an old Caldwell, you know, go through TSA and like, is that a bomb? You know,
right.
It'll fit in your pocket.
Yeah.
USB rechargeable. Yeah, it just works.
Yeah. And by the way, we're not, I have no affiliation with Garmin, although I wish I did. I just highly recommend their products. I think it's phenomenal stuff. So, yeah. So air density, that's awesome. Okay. So, so the precision gear, you called it, what did you call it again? Dispersion. And then bullet?
Dispersion is basically, let's call it your group size.
Okay.
So, you know, we use the term a one MOA group, which is approximately 1 inch at 100 yards. Things at 100 yards are very measurable. And there's less than a tenth of a second time of flight, so that the wind doesn't move it much. So we can determine, okay, this is good ammunition. I can manage a good small group. If it's a larger group, there's the possibility that if everything's set up right, when you set up your optic and such and go to zero that thing and you have a 1.5 inch group, that might be all that system's capable of. It might not be quite as precise. But as long as you know that and you know the limitations of what it is capable of, what you are capable, you become a marksman. It would be no different than if I gave a 15-year-old quasi-OK bow to Cameron Haynes. The dude's going to outshoot me with the newest, coolest gear because he knows how to use it very well. So you take that 1.5 inch rifle system and someone who understands the environment can actually place that shot within a reasonable distance mm-hmm. versus I can take some of my students and I have rifle systems that will shoot a 1/4 inch group and they first are going down to zero and getting acquainted with the rifle system, and they are producing a 1.25 inch group until they start calming down and understanding how much their movement affects that group size. Mm. So that dispersion gets compounded the farther that we shoot.
So one of the biggest things I picked up on dispersion is wrapping my thumb around the grip or the stock.
Oh, man.
Okay, so talk about that, and is that a big issue? You know, so like we go back to, well, granddaddy did it this way. My pops did it this way. This is the gun that he handed it down, and he hunted with a walnut stock. It's like, yeah, but right. That's what it was back then, and shots were 150, 200 at, you know, maybe,
both.
Right? So, but now we're talking shooting cross canyon and having the, you know, hunt of a lifetime on the line and you needing to make that shot and you're not taking granddaddy's old gun. So all modern guns seem to be going to more of a pistol grip, and talk about that and the torque of wrapping the thumb and like why that's important.
Right. I wish they wouldn't call it a grip. I wish they'd call it a lever.
Okay.
A lever so you can adjust your left to right cant to versus gripping it, because you can't engage your trigger finger, your index finger, and the palm muscle below your thumb without engaging the other. You can't engage your trigger finger without movement there. So if you're gripping that as you press the trigger rearward, it's going to apply, if you're a right-handed shooter, it's going to press downward and left. And as the rifle moves rearward, that dispersion from the system, it's going to hook that a little high and right. That little high and right turns into a lot of high and right downrange. And I'll glass for students who are, you know, it was hard for me to learn that. And I'll be glassing. I won't even have to look at them. And I'll see it go on an IPSC over right shoulder. And I'll just go, where's your thumb? And they're like, and they realize that how much that input as the person managing that dispersion, even the trigger press, slapping the trigger instead of following through. And what people don't understand is there is a mindset you've got to be in to make that shot happen. There is nothing the human brain likes about an explosion 2.5 feet in front of the face. Nothing. You know, we write these neural paths, and people who have shot lightweight Magnum calibers, they flinch because their brain says, every time I pull this trigger, this gun kicks my butt. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to rewrite that neural path. So going to a lighter trigger and understanding that you can screw up a shot just with your trigger press if you yank that thing rearward. Mm-hmm. So those are the inputs to dispersion. That's the difference between someone who can pull the trigger well and someone who's a marksman, understanding what inputs are going to change. Where is that barrel pointed as the bullet leaves? It truly is that simple. It's just like I use the term ground the rifle, which is point the barrel at the target. And once people finally understand that if I point the barrel at the target and get my elevation at least somewhat close, once you get in the glass, it's probably in your glass already. Instead of turning the magnification down, fishing for the target and trying to adjust your position, being efficient to build your position, manage recoil impulse, those things. That's the difference between just a shooter and a marksman.
I like to consider myself an athlete, right? Like I was a college quarterback in football, and I played basketball, and I pitched in baseball. And so all these things involved throwing or moving a ball towards a specific target. In basketball, it's all about the follow through. In football, I got to have a good follow through. And so you mentioned, are you slapping the trigger or are you following through? I didn't know that you need to follow through on a trigger until this spring of this year. And it is a very hard habit for me to break. I like to slap the trigger I'm a touch, press, bam, and then finger off the trigger guy. Yeah. And that also I corrected of pulling my head off the gun also, right? Like that's also another bad thing. So is it a trigger press or is it a trigger pull? And tomato, tomato, but
exactly. You hit that on the head. It's basically just staying in that, engage the trigger, touch it first, get in your shot, watch everything happen, because pulling a trigger is 80% mental and 20% physical. It's, am I in the shot? Am I dialed for my shot? Am I ready for this? And press it or pull it straight back. And the other thing about putting your thumb on the side is if you have a 2.5 pound trigger, you can negate that pressure with your thumb. So I can squeeze these together, if you will. So my trigger press isn't an input to dispersion. And that's why I keep digressing to dispersion, because that's what it is. It's how much dispersion are you generating? The other is, like you said, pulling that trigger and lifting up your head to see what's going on. And a lot of new shooters do that. Well, when we start shooting far, half the time you can't even see the damn target. Mm-hmm. You have to watch it happen through the optic. So when you come off that trigger after you press it, you've given your brain permission to come out of the shot. If you want to be your own spotter, you want to watch everything happen downrange and stay in that shot. You press it, do your best to watch everything happen through there, and then come up.
So when we're about to take off, and we're sending that rocket, we want to hold on. We want that stay on that trigger all the way to the back of that wall and hold it and watch your impact.
Correct.
And hopefully not a miss.
And I love archery guys that have been, because I'm also an archery geek. You know, basically, if I can fling anything, I'm pretty happy. Mm-hmm. And when it becomes repeatable, I can hit the target. It's cool. But same thing in archery. You know, we draw back, find our anchor point, get in it, and people would just pull the trigger and drop the bow. Well, there's a possibility the arrow hasn't actually left the rest yet.
Right.
So staying in that shot to ensure that you're staying in that shot, that the arrow has had time to leave the rest. Now we're consistent. We're managing where's the arrow pointed versus where is it when it left the rest.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing with a rifle.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I like that. Okay. So one of the things that I've found, and Timney is a great partner of mine here at Soul Seekers. And so I highly recommend, you know, encouraging people to, when they get a firearm, upgrade it to a Timney trigger.
I love the triggers.
Regardless of whether it's a Timney or it's some sort of aftermarket trigger, there that makes a big difference in somebody being a better shooter, right? Like that's your, I feel like your first connection with the explosion. You know, it could be your shoulder or whatever, but like you know, that trigger is you in connecting with it. So a lot of these guns, they have horrible triggers. And does that cause bad shooters?
It can. It really can, because, you know, we used to be told, when I say me, you know, growing up was squeeze, 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 let the shot surprise you. And that's because triggers were crappy. Really. I mean, I've got some old guns and it feels like it's a 3-stage trigger because it just keeps creeping back until it finally goes off. You get a good trigger and you can predict when that's going to break, and it's consistent every time. So now I can tell the system when to go off. As long as I don't slap the trigger, I know I've got a 1, 1.5, 2 pound trigger, whatever it is, you know, single stage or dual stage, whatever your preference is. But you know, you can predict how much pressure when that's going to go off. So at that point, we can tell it when to go off. I'm at the bottom of my breath. I'm steady. My reticle's not wobbling. I made my wind hold and I'm going to send it. I don't have to go, okay, remember wind hold. I got to squeeze. Uh-oh, wind change. Oh, something happened, because that feels like an eternity. Mm-hmm. And trying to predict when that's going to go, and then we start curling our finger in or pressing it back, and we're moving the gun as we're pressing the trigger. And again, that's dispersion. Now, yeah. Where's the barrel pointing?
So you bring up dispersion once again, and big question, because I've never been taught this. Do you shoot on a breath out, or do you shoot on a air in and hold your breath?
If you can, and that's if you can, you're going to get the most consistent results at the bottom of your breath, which is respiratory pause. You have 3 to 5 seconds where everything calms down a little more. Your body is the same shape, so the rifle to shoulder connection is consistent. But there is a time where you've got to make that shot. Live shooting scenario, animal, what have you. You breathe in, you're exhaling, and it's called a pregnant pause. You just stop, send it. But you don't want to be exhaling or inhaling as you do that. And you don't want to hold your breath, because when you hold your breath, you'll tense up, and then you start seeing heart rate. And you wouldn't want to see that pulse, that little bounce in there. We want to make sure that we're on the way out, because typically, because of gravity, as you're exhaling, the barrel is coming up. So you've come in below the target. You breathe. As you breathe, the barrel and the reticle come right up in the target. So you can stop at any point or wait till you get to respiratory pause. Send it.
Interesting. Okay, so we've talked grip, we've talked trigger, we've talked breathing. What else do we need to know for the fundamentals?
On the fundamentals, really, those are the key things, is just having the mental association with dispersion, wrapping your heads around that, and your inputs and the rifle system's inputs to that amount of movement. Because if I stuck you behind an 8 pound 338 Lapua and said, all right, man, do the best you can. I want to see the smallest group you manage in 100 yards, 5 shots. It's not going to be a small group.
Right.
And by about the third time you pull that trigger, your brain's going to go, this is going to kick my butt. And you start to flinch, right? But I take you and put you behind that 25 Creed, and it doesn't kick much. Mm-hmm. Same shooter, same target, same everything. And you can manage that dispersion. Brian Litz, world-renowned ballistician, the guy is applied ballistics. He came up with this neat little algorithm and said, if you take your kinetic energy at the muzzle, let's say you've got 3,000 foot pounds of kinetic energy, and divide it by what your rifle system weighs. If that number is 200 or higher, you have a very small likelihood of managing a 1-inch group or smaller, because human beings weigh between X and Y, right? We're all a certain window, and that gun is going to move you that much more. So managing that is much more difficult. Now that the more that number drops down, then the more accurate we can be. We can manage that recoil. We can manage the kick. And I'm glad to see more and more manufacturers, even Gunworks. Some of these folks are like, hey, you know, let's not go for the biggest caliber we can. Let's go for something that is going to give you shot placement. Yeah. It's not going to develop bad habits, because I'm going to flinch every time I pull the trigger. And being able to make good shot placement with an ethical distances, man, that's a game changer. Mm. It really is.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So speaking of Creedmoor, my favorite caliber is 22 Creedmoor.
It's a screamer.
It screams fast. I love speed. Speed kills. But at the same time, zero recoil. Like, it's like shooting a 22 long rifle.
It is.
But it's, you know, adequate for big game. So, like, I find myself always wanting to go to that. And you know, you get these people that are like, well, dude, bigger is better. You know, if it's not a long action Magnum, it ain't going to do the job. And then you have guys like Tyler Friel, who writes for Outdoor Life, who's been on the podcast, and he's killing elk with 22 arcs and moose in Alaska with 22 arcs, like these little tiny, you know, cartridges. And so I think it's really fascinating is understanding the psychology of yourself and how you operate behind that gun. Exactly what you're saying. Like, I don't actually like long actions. I'm not a fan of them. I don't like getting beat up. I don't like having my gun jump so much that I can't stay in my scope and see my target after the shot.
Right.
But at the same time, long actions, you know, that's a lot more energy and a bigger bullet. And, you know, so there's this, okay, Mr. Fritz, what do you recommend? Are you a short action guy? Or you get the best caliber for yourself?
I didn't used to be, but I am. I'm a believer. The more I've learned more about ballistics, bullet shapes, the geek stuff, right? But if we look at the retained energy of certain bullets downrange, if these bullets aren't slowing down versus a big, heavy bullet that is slowing down, well, big and heavy doesn't necessarily give you more kinetic energy downrange.
Right.
So if I decide to shoot a freaking, you know, a 300 Win Mag, and I've always loved 300 Win Mag, and shoot a heavy bullet, shoot a 200 grain bullet, well, it's a fatter profile bullet with a decent ballistic coefficient, but it slows down. And then people are like, well, you can't shoot a 6.5 PRC at something like that. Well, actually, when you look at the efficiency of that bullet and downrange, how much kinetic energy it has, they're right there neck and neck. But I don't have to count on brute force if I made a bad shot to hit it with a Chevy G-Van and hope that it dies. I'm gonna make an accurate shot. I'm gonna put it where it's supposed to be.
Yeah. It reminds me of the movie Braveheart. If you're familiar with when William Wallace reconnects with his childhood friend, and his friend is like, I could hit you with that boulder. And he picks up that giant rock and he throws it at William Wallace and he misses. And then William picks up that tiny little stone and throws it and hits him right in the forehead.
Yep.
I mean, that's not a one-to-one example, but it's very similar as far
premise,
as...
Premise, yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's it. And I'm glad, like I said, I'm glad to see more and more. You know, it's no different than looking at stars on ratings and things like that. We, as a society, we like the validation of those that we follow, look up to, industry leaders, finally saying different things. You're like, okay, so it is okay. You may not totally understand why, but when you can actually make accurate shots and see, like you said, the 22 Creed, it's going super fast. And because there's not a lot of dispersion, we're making tight shots. Yeah. I mean, we're putting them through the Boilermaker, not just going for center of mass of, okay, I've got an 18-inch kill zone. As long as I'm somewhere in there, I'm good. Right. No, we're putting it where we want it.
The days of pie plates being good enough are over.
They're not necessary.
Yeah.
You know, the equipment is that much better. The optics are that much better.
Well, and just for example, for all the listeners, my middle son, who is 8 years old, I took him out to the gun range this summer. We were prepping for deer season. And I got this 22 Creedmoor is my all around go-to gun, but I specifically got it for my kids. Like, it's their deer gun. And I put it up on a tripod after we zeroed the scope and they shot it off the bench. And we went out to 720 yards and there was some turkey targets at this range. And now I had the gun stationary. So, you know, that deviation of that or dispersion of that, you know, I controlled the gun being as stable as possible for my son, and I dialed my dope specific. He still had to squeeze the trigger. He still had to go through and make sure he was good. And he had first round impact at 720 yards. I'm like, holy smokes. Like,
right?
Like, that's how it should be. He's, you know, when you're not thinking about the explosion or the recoil or, you know,
right,
just get on the gun and do your job.
Because if that gun were a Magnum caliber and jumped, and that boom, that concussion, that the smack on the shoulder, and if you told him to pull the trigger again, and be like, "No, nah, I'm good, Dad."
Yeah, well, and you know that's, I mean? That's why I'm a fan of suppressors as well, right? Like anything to mitigate flinch, recoil, and the overall concussion of what the explosion is.
Oh yeah. It's not, if I'm spotting for someone, we're shooting cannons, you know, 338 Lapuas, 300 Norma mags, 338 Normas, and they're not suppressed. The muzzle brakes. I will tell the shooter, please say sending. Let me know when you're going to send that shot. Because if you don't, and they're like, where'd that go? Because not only could you not see it, I couldn't see it because I flinched. And, you know, right. I'm the spotter and I flinched. And right. There's something to be said about that. I mean, that's just how it happens. So being able to take that concussion, right, the dust flying, that boom out of it and make it pleasant. I train 100% suppressed. And it makes such a difference. And it's neat because people get the opportunity to get behind a suppressed precision rifle. And now they need that in their life. They're like, man, this is, you know,
not a want. It's a need.
I need this in my life because, you know, you get the, oh, yeah, we messed with suppressors 20 years ago with accuracy issues. Uh-huh. Well, we don't now at all. I mean, point of impact shifts, these types of things, and being able to produce small groups through suppressors and not have to deal with all that garbage.
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. what do you think about the whole idea of having a training rifle? Like maybe it's 22 long rifle or maybe it's 5.56 or, you know, like practicing on something that is less recoil, less explosion, less concussion, better for when you do pick up that bigger gun, or is it best to practice with what you're going to be shooting?
No, having a training system is phenomenal because it does two things for you. Well, outside the financial end of it, of being $2, $3, $4, $5 every time you pull a trigger, it's pennies. But what it does is our brains write neural paths, and those neural paths are, if I pull the trigger every time and this gun kicks my butt, I'm not going to be able to help but flinch. So if I can pull a trigger and hit the target and watch things happen through the optic and create small groups, now my brain says, hey, it's okay. Every time I pull this trigger, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
So less recoil. Now we're rewriting that neural path that it's okay to pull the trigger, and you're still, regardless of the caliber, because the math is universal. How much is the wind going to move it? How small of a group can I do? Now I'm going to shoot smaller targets, aim small and miss small. Then you pick up your other gun, and now you're not anticipating that shot. And all it is just a different drop factor. It's not going to drop as much because it's a heavier bullet going faster. But now you'll find yourself being a lot more accurate. It's the other thing you can do is dry firing exercises. And I do tell people this. If you're going to do dry firing exercises, obviously be safe. No ammunition around or in the room. And you're going to run that bolt and pull the trigger, because most triggers, when they break, are over 90 decibels. It's actually a pretty loud snap. And you can tell where that reticle was, where your crosshairs were when that shot broke. And you can be honest with yourself and say, I tanked that shot. Or, oh, man, that was good. The caution I use tell people is train like you're going to fight. So if you're going to do dry fire exercises, throw some hypothetical distance in there and dial your turret for it. Because if you don't, and all you do is run the bolt and pull the trigger, you'll get in the field, range your animal, get behind the optic, and pull the trigger. And you won't have the appropriate elevation or holdover for it, and you're going to miss. Mm.
I have a mental checklist when I shoot archery, right? And that comes from being an archery instructor. And so it's, you know, it is, you know, everyone's different. But for me, one of the biggest things is before I'm even on target or before I'm even considering squeezing that trigger that on that release is my elbow up. Is my elbow up. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I get, do I have a good anchor? Am I level? Is my elbow up? Am I on target? Am I level?
Yeah.
Okay, then send it. And so I'm constantly mental checklisting myself. Is there a mental checklist? You kind of just talked about it right there. Train like you hunt, train like you fight. Is there a mental checklist that you go through or recommend for shooters in preparation?
Absolutely. So one of the things I do in my course is so I wrote a handbook. So the first couple hours of the first day, we go over the, let's call it, description and theory and operation of everything. We talk about everything first, and I tell people it's water through a fire hose. It's kind of like the movie Karate Kid. Most of us have seen that. Mm-hmm. And he's like, why do I have to sand the floor, paint the fence? And then, you know, toward the end of that segment, that scene, Mr. Miyagi throws some punches at him and he blocks them all. And he's like, oh, that's why I had to do that. Yeah. So then we get to the range and start walking through these steps. But I have in there what's called my shooter checklist. And it's ground the rifle, meaning point the rifle at the target, center behind the target so you don't have to change your position, and build a stable, comfortable position. Verify your firing solution. I mean, make sure you're not on zero. Make sure you're not dialed for the last target. So this is like your pre-flight checklist. Mm-hmm. And make sure you're going to check your cant, breathe, send it, see it. Now, with a hunting rifle, if it's a bigger caliber, I might not see it. But if I don't skip any of those steps and I make a good wind call, as long as I follow through my fundamentals, it's going to be a first-round impact. It's going to be done. And that's the shooter checklist, as I call it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I love that. At what distance do you feel like shooters or hunters really need to start having a level on their gun?
Well, depending on the shooter, you can be pretty darn canted and at 300 yards and create a problem. But definitely when we start going 400, 500, 600 yards, really pay attention to that. You know, kind of like in archery, if we're shooting 10, 15, 20 yards, if your bubble's off a little bit, it's not dynamic. You're a little bit left or a little bit right. But if you do that at 50 or 60 or 70 yards, I kind of like to use archery. So that's why I love translating some of this to archery people is it's archery times 10.
Mm-hmm. Magnified. Yeah.
Yeah. 10 yards is 100, 20 yards is 200, 30 yards is 300, so on. Right. So if you're going to shoot 100 yards with a bow, it's like shooting 1,000 yards with a rifle. Mm. And understanding those how much those movements, when they count. But really, those I would tell someone to be a little less cognizant of not being canted at 400 or 500 yards versus what's the wind doing? What's the environment doing? The environment's going to be 80% of your miss. So I'd rather you be a degree or two canted. Your bubble's not perfectly level, but you're cognizant of what the wind is doing. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a much, much greater effect.
Yeah.
Almost 10 times is what the wind's going to move it. And I like to translate it like just on a geek thing, but people kind of grasp this is if I have a bullet that on the box has a G1BC of like 0.523, 0.5 something, whatever, I like to call it a 5 mile an hour gun. And what that means is a 5 mile an hour wind. So just a little summer breeze is going to move that 2/10 of a mil at 200, 5/10 at 500, 8/10 at 800, and 1 mil at 1,000. Well, what is that? Well, 1 mil at 1,000 yards is 36 inches. So just a 5 mile an hour summer breeze moves that 36 inches off of target at 1,000 yards.
And people who are not quick with math, that's 3 feet.
That is 3 feet.
That's a miss or a wounded animal.
Absolutely. So being aware of wind direction and how much it's going to move your projectile. And I think those are the things that really connect out here because we're shooting across a canyon. My closest target's 415 yards other than zeroing at 100. And then we go to 550, 637, and so on. And because of the way the canyon is, it's truly perfect for what I'm using it for. We consistently have 5, 10, and 15 mile an hour left to right winds. And people get to do the math quick and go, oh, okay, so I'm shooting 795 yards, so I would hold this much, and they hit the target. Mm. As soon as they understand, wow. But then when you stop for a moment and go, do you realize how far off target you were holding? And they're like, oh my gosh, that is actually quite a bit. And the first thing that happens is people forget to hold for wind, and they send it right down the middle.
Mm. Interesting.
And knowing that that's a factor. So at my range, during the spring, vegetation grows, blah, blah, blah. And then once it starts dying down, I go out with a weed trimmer and I trim all the vegetation around the targets down to just dirt. So we can see the splash. We can see the misses. Well, before I go out and do that, because I've run so many courses, the off wind side of the target, that vegetation is pretty much gone already because there's been that many misses because of the wind.
Yeah.
Not holding enough for the wind. And that really reels people in when they're associating this to hunting. And we're talking the 500, 600, 700, 800 yard target. The whole right side of that thing, a foot and a half or two, is already down to dirt because there have been that many misses. So that gives me, you know, statistically, people aren't holding enough for wind. Mm. So should that person be sending one at an animal at that distance?
Right. How do you determine what wind is at distance?
That's there's no part of wind that is truly difficult. There's really no part of like precision shooting that's difficult. Not any one segment of it. It's just understanding there's seven or eight key things that really need to come together. And it's no different than driving a car. The first time you got into a car and you're struggling to stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Right. You're trying to just stay, don't hit it, and you hit the brakes too hard or not enough, and you accelerate too hard, or at some point we don't even think about those things. They become muscle memory. Mm-hmm. Same thing with a marksman. There are the things we don't even need to think about anymore. I know where the rifle goes, I know where my hand goes, I can run the bolt. We start thinking about the environment. And not to go off track there.
No, about the wind. Like, how do you determine cross canyon what a wind is doing versus, you know, if it's on your side and
you right. Because you can't measure it. You can't measure it at the shooter. The terrain's going to lie to you. If the hillside you're standing on is heating up, it might be going right to left versus it's left to right. And it's kind of a where's Waldo. When I first tell you, when we're looking at vegetation movement or mirage, you know, it's the deer in the headlights look, but it, all of a sudden you see it and you're like, oh, okay. So that would be a 5 mile an hour wind. Yeah. So we're coming up with just an average. And I tell people, I'll hold my hands out and say, wind is this much education. Mm-hmm. And then this much intuition. Mm-hmm. And again, this much luck. And the reason being is it can change by the time you've made your call and pull the trigger. But at least understanding the dynamics of how wind moves and how much it's going to move your bullet.
Yeah.
You look at the air between you and that target and determine a wind speed. And it's no different than how water flows in a river. If a river is flowing 10,000 cubic feet per second, it's not every step of the way, right? There's little frog water and a backwards eddy and the channel and white water. But the cross section of that wind of that water is 10,000 cubic feet per second. We do the same thing with wind. We're going to look at the wind between us and the target, look at the air, look at the vegetation, and come up with a speed. And you can tell is it walking speed? Is it a running speed? You know, especially during the fall, there's leaves going through the air, there's dust, there's bugs, and you can determine, are they not moving or are they moving fast?
Okay, that right there is awesome. That makes sense because I've always judged distance based off of a football field. So we use something that we know as like, hey, walking speed is 3 miles an hour. Is that right? Moving at somebody walking at 3 miles, or does that look like it's somebody moving faster than the walking pace? Right there, that's easy to remember, and I'm going to be able to take that afield. That's huge.
Here's my panic azimuth. I'm standing out there, and it's a little breezy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hold for a 5 mile an hour wind. I'm standing out there, and it's kind of windy. I'm going to hold for a 10.
Yeah.
Man, it's windy. I'm going to hold for a 15, and you'd be surprised how close you'll be. You'll probably be on target.
Yeah.
So at least come up with like a panic asthma. It's like, oh my God, what's the wind doing? It's a little breezy. Hold for a 5. Send it. Good job.
I like that. Just real quick for sake of time and wrapping this up, what did we miss? Or do you feel like there's anything that you want to make sure that listeners take away with from this episode?
You know, the one thing is that understanding the optic is the most misunderstood part of a rifle system. So when we go to zero our rifles, we've got to look, make sure that it's set up properly for us, make sure that we're not like have to scrunch your head back or stretch your neck forward to see through the optic, because you're going to induce movement if you have to do that. Make sure that it's set up right, and then understanding we're looking for what's called parallax. So that little side focus on the side of there is also a parallax. So you want to make sure your zero is zero, meaning there's not wiggle room in that zero. So when you get on your gun and you start turning that and you start clearing up the target and you look, you want to just slightly just nod your head up and down and make sure that your crosshairs aren't floating off the target, because you can't put your face and your eyeball in the same exact spot every single time. So adjust the optics so that there is no parallax. Otherwise, your zero is not zero.
Interesting. So that's what parallax means.
Yeah.
And if you wear polarized sunglasses, that can affect parallax.
It can. It can, because you're aligning lenses. So you're aligning your eyeball, your lens with the ocular lens and then the other lenses that are in there. Mm-hmm. And as you adjust that, you're moving that lens. If you have, and it's going to depend on the quality of the glasses. If you have glasses that aren't changing magnification or anything like that, no, you're good. It's just going to change the shade or what have you. But if they're reading glasses or regular glasses, yeah, choose how you're going to shoot. Yeah. With contacts, without contacts. With glasses, without glasses.
Gotcha. All right, well, we're going to be releasing this episode probably at the beginning of rifle season across a lot of Western states, and then all the Southern whitetail hunters and Midwest guys, they're going to be catching this with plenty of time before their rifle seasons kick off. Your course is actually in the state of Idaho, but you do some traveling as well for courses?
Yeah, I'm actually working. We'll have the final go, but it looks like I'm going to be doing some training just right around Coleman, Texas. So Gun Brothers Ranch, and they do guided pig hunts and whitetail and doves and waterfowl. It's just a neat place. They've got a new building, a gun store that they're stocking up right now. They're finishing it up. It'll be done in the next few weeks. And being able to run courses there is going to be pretty phenomenal, because we've got a lot of students. I've got folks that fly in from all over the country, and to have a centralized location there that we can train during the winter is going to be phenomenal. It really is.
That's awesome. How often are you running courses for people to sign up for?
So in Idaho, I typically run anywhere from minimum of 3 to sometimes 6 courses a month, and they're 2-day courses. They are all inclusive. You can just show up with your clothes. And it is food, lodging, snacks, drinks, all world-class equipment. We're using Kestrel ballistic meters, suppressed rifle systems, support bags, all the gear to try out and figure out. If you're looking to get into this, try out different products so you can make an educated purchasing decision. Yeah. Also, what is really key, especially for hunters, PRS shooters, is we do very little shooting prone, laying on our belly. It's getting people off their belly on kneeling, standing, seated, tripod integration. Yeah. And it's so practical because you don't have to lay on your belly to shoot far.
Yeah. Well, that and laying prone is like the cheating of long distance shooting, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, absolutely.
I need to find a stump or a rock, or I'm laying awkwardly off of a hillside to shoot across that canyon, or, you know. And so that comes into play, and it's like, oh, I wish I had a rear rest. I wish my gun could just balance itself. And so, yeah, that was one of the big things of when I did my first PRS match, is understanding how important it is to be able to manipulate my weapon in a comfortable, I'm not fighting my weapon.
Right.
Right. I'm not fighting it to hold it in a position. Like
well, I can tell you this, when I was in Texas earlier this or last week, we did a little hunting. There was no ground that I wanted to lay down on.
No, not at all.
The spiders, the fire ants, the cactus, and everything else that wanted to kill me.
Yeah.
I was not getting on the ground.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, that's great. And tripod shooting. I mean, dude, that is the new way of hunting, new way of shooting.
Game changer.
Yeah.
Both of the bulls me and my buddy killed last year, both from tripod.
That's awesome. Okay, brother, we got so much to talk about. Again, we're probably going to have to get you back on. I'm going to need to sign up for one of your courses and do it live and really, you know, recap that. That'll be a great experience.
Love to have you out.
How can people go find you? Where can they sign up for your courses? What is the typical cost of a course?
So the course is $1,200 plus ammo. And that, again, that is all inclusive. You can bring a rifle system, your system, if it's the right system for what we're doing. If we're doing long range shooting, we want a long range rifle system. But if not, shoot mine or bring yours and we'll run them both. We do shoot 100% suppressed. If you don't have a suppressor, I've got them. We can throw one on it. But again, it is everything included. Steak dinner, the lodging. And the other that's really unique about the venue is the class sizes are a maximum of 5. So it's not 30 dudes and 4 of them are scratching their head and 4 of them are like pro shooters kind of a thing and people are feeling inadequate. It's everyone gets the one-on-one attention. And then even after, when we come back from the range and we're having steak dinner and drinks and just kind of BSing, you're picking my brain until you go to bed. And then we get up the next morning, we have breakfast, and it's next questions. We have a recap. We go to the range, and everyone gets the time on target acquisition, recoil management, every little aspect. And you're going to get a lifetime worth of information and saving frustration and ammo in 2 days.
I love that. You said $1,200 plus ammo. So what does that mean? Do I have to provide my own ammo? You have ammo, and then how, depending on how much you want to shoot, how much is expected to be shot at a course, or like?
Thank you for asking that. I do have ammo on site, and because it is really important to have ammunition that's all the same lot number. So the same brand and same lot number, because lot to lot, you get maybe a different powder, so it's going faster or slower. So it made it easier to have ammunition on site that is like Berger, Hornady, Match, stuff that shoots very, very well, and having cases of the same lot numbers. Now, of course, people, if they have the ammunition, by all means, bring it, and we'll talk about what calibers. If you go to my website, fritzprecisionshooting.com, you can click on view available dates and see the available dates. I'll be posting 2026 here pretty soon, as well as the Texas dates. I don't let people just book from the site, reach out to me. I like to talk to folks and make sure, one, that the course is what they want. I'm going to meet their needs, answer their questions, because there's always a lot of questions. Well, how does this work? And, well, I'm coming from here. I can pick it from the airport. You come in the day before. So I really make it super, super easy. In fact, I had a class this last weekend. Today's Monday. One of them was catching a flight. The other was driving very far. They stayed here last night. We still had breakfast this morning, and they left at 8 o'clock this morning.
Yeah.
I don't want people hitting the road, smoked, tired, and think they got to live on energy drinks and drive, you know, just stay here. It's no skin off my back, and leave. And I make a lot of friends. Really do. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal thing.
Awesome. I love it. Well, guys, I hope you found some information that you can apply for your upcoming hunts this year or in the future. Remember, it's our job to be the most ethical, lethal, deadly hunter shooters out there, and you are worth investing in. And that's one of the things I want you to understand is, like, if you hunt just one weekend an entire year, you're spending time, energy, and resources on that one thing. You are worth investing in. How much money do you spend in other things that don't provide meat and adventure and all these other life-sustaining things in which hunting provides? So if you want to become a better shooter, go check out a shooting school. And one I recommend is Fritz Precision Shooting. You go to fritzprecisionshooting.com. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Let me know what you think of the podcast. Let me know if this podcast helped you on your shooting this coming year. Thank you for tuning in. Good luck on your hunts. Remember that hunting has the power to transform lives through primal adventure, and that you can never outgive good. For Don Fritz at Fritz Precision Shooting and Johnny Mack here at Soul Seekers, be blessed. Thank you so much. Freedom on, and stay soulful. If you enjoyed today's podcast and want to support the show, you can always like, share, subscribe, and leave a rating, as it helps us share our mission of mentorship is conservation. Thank you so much for tuning in and being a part of Soul Seekers Nation as we transform lives through primal adventure.